You are listening to the Holistic Travel Nurse Podcast. I'm going to try to give you a few different things. This one I'm going to play here in a second is from thetruedefender.com. And this is a guy, Alex, just let you listen. And what he's going to talk about are the jab. I got to get to it to have it open. Sometimes it's a little slow. Sometimes. So just bear with it while they have to turn it down for the ads. And you tell me what you think. This is not being shared on mainstream news. Why not?
Dr. Mike Yeadon. I'm a qualified life science researcher, really. I have a first degree in biochemistry and toxicology, and have a research-based PhD in respiratory pharmacology. And then I've worked for 32 years, mostly in big pharmaceutical companies, and 10 years in the biotechnology sector. So my last job in big pharma, I was the vice president and chief scientist of allergy and respiratory research. I left Pfizer in 2011. And then after that, I founded, grew, and sold a biotech company called Ziarko to Novartis. That was 2017. And so before that and afterwards, an independent advisor to over 30 startup biotechnology companies. So you would expect from that I am pro new medicines of all kind. Our goals always were to address unmet medical need and to do so with acceptable safety given the medical context. And I'm in favor of all modes of new medical treatments, whether they're biologicals or vaccines, small molecules, creams, sprays, ointments, whatever. But I'm fervently against unsafe medicines or medicines used in an inappropriate context. And so some of the things I'm going to say are not favorable to the current crop of gene-based vaccines, and it's for that reason that they're being inappropriately used, and I don't think they have a sufficient safety profile to be used as a sort of wide-spectrum public health prophylactic. As a result of that background in pharmaceutical industry and biotechnology, I am pro new medical entities that treat unmet need and do so safely, and that's true whether the entity is a vaccine or a biological, like an antibody, or if it's what I would call a small molecule therapeutic, you know, a pill or a tablet. But I'm anti-unsafe medicines, regardless of what format they are. And so my criticisms sometimes fall onto unsafe small molecule substances and sometimes on unsafe vaccines. So I'm generally pro new medicines as long as they are safe and effective and used appropriately, and I'm anti the opposite of those things. A few things have allowed me, I think, to spot what's going on in the world at the moment. I do have, I would say, two big advantages. One, I've loved biology since I was little, and this year marks the 40th year I've been studying, continuing to learn and to apply biology broadly, whether it's pharmacology, biochemistry, molecular biology, toxicology. And so I've got a very broad grounding in all things to do with life science in terms of health and disease. But one of my former supervisors said that I had a remarkable facility that stood out above the sort of ordinary things you'd have to do to be a vice president or a CEO. And he said that I was able to spot patterns in sparse data earlier than my peers did. So when there was not enough data for most people to judge what was going on, I would often be able to see it. I could see a pattern forming when there wasn't quite enough information. And really, I guess I was running a lot of simulations in my head and trying to work out what could these small bits of information mean. Rather than waiting for more data, it's my word, I think I know what's happening here. And that would sometimes be applied to, say, target selection in industry or how we should prosecute a program or what the competition was doing. But on this occasion, it allowed me quite quickly to work out that what we were being told about this virus and what we needed to do in order to stay safe was simply not true. For example, early on in the UK, there were enormous changes made in attribution of causes of death. So we'd never had anything as absurd as the rule that is now used. So if you should die within 28 days of having a positive result in a, an inappropriate test using molecular biology, then you would be declared to have died of COVID-19. That's just wrong. It's not just a matter of disagreeing professionally. It's just complete nonsense. And we can certainly talk about the unreliability, untrustworthy nature of PCR testing, but also things like lockdown. I mean, just the whole phrase of it, the fact that it was completely unprecedented, and that we basically were to minimise contact one with another, and that that was going to save us. I knew quite early on that that was rubbish, and the reason is simple, that only people who are ill and have symptoms are really strong infectious risks to other people. And those people are not people who are walking around in the community, because if you're full of virus and symptomatic, you are also ill. And ill people tend to stay at home or in bed, and or if they're very serious, they end up in hospital or die. And so the idea that if you cut normal contacts at work and just civic society and your normal economy, that that would slow epidemic spreading, I was fairly sure fairly on that that was bunk. And unfortunately, it took several months before that was clear, by which time the idea that lockdown is what you need to do had been pretty much cemented in most of the world. So basically, everything your government has told you about this virus, everything you need to do to stay safe, is a lie, every part of it, and I'll be challenged on that. Literally, there are none of the key themes that you hear talked about, from asymptomatic transmission to top-up vaccines, not one of those things is supported by the science. Every piece is a cleverly chosen adjacency to something that probably is true but is itself a lie, and has led people to where I believe we are right now. And I don't normally use phrases like this, but I think we are standing at the very gates of hell. Yeah, when I first heard the phrase lockdown, for example, I hope, like most people, I thought this is a phrase you use in relation to controlling unruly prisoners. It's a control measure. And I think pretty much all that has happened since is to do with control. This myth of asymptomatic transmission, which is simply not true, as I mentioned earlier, in order to transmit a virus to be a good, efficient source of infection, you have to have a lot of virus. And if you have a lot of virus in you, the virus is attacking you and you are fighting back. That process produces symptoms inevitably. It's not just occasionally, it must always happen. And so all people who are very good sources of infection are ill. So the whole idea of asymptomatic transmission, I would think if it occurs at all, it's like 1% or 0.1%, as good as a strong infectious case. So by the time we got to about the third main theme of this pandemic and how to control it, I knew I was being lied to all the time by government, scientists, their advisors, by ministers, people on the TV. And I'm afraid that impression has simply firmed up as time's gone on. And so it's all about control. Obviously, I have my own thoughts about what that control is going to be used for. And I certainly want to communicate that to your listeners and viewers. I remember one of the things I started doing early on, because I understood it quite well, was to publicly criticise the PCR, or polymerase chain reaction test, because I knew enough about it. I'm not a molecular biology expert, but I've hired people who are, and I understand how PCR works, this idea of developing primers, bait, as it were, for the thing you're trying to detect, and then to amplify it repeatedly, potentially up to a trillion-fold. People will be pretty familiar, I think, with the idea of DNA testing that would be used for forensic purposes. And I point out to them that the PCR test uses most of the same technology. And imagine if you were preparing for a trial and you were able, with your attorney, to show the judge the conditions under which PCR testing was being done. Relatively inexperienced lab staff doing hundreds of thousands of pipetting actions a day in the same laboratory. And you said, look, Your Honour, my client's sample is one of those on the bench there. you know, there might be cross-contamination. In fact, I suspect it's inevitable. But you'll get the result shortly. I mean, the judge would just throw the entire evidence set out of court, and rightly so. But it's the same technology that's being used to work out whether your sample or that of a family member or someone in your community is or is not positive for this virus. It's completely fraudulent, the way it's being done. You simply cannot run a technique like that at industrial scale and expect the results to be meaningful, and they're not. I don't think they've ever been meaningful. One of the frauds our government and the people they hired to run the testing have done is they refused to entertain the idea that there is something called a false positive rate. I assure you, if you run any diagnostic test repeatedly, sometimes there'll be a positive result when there's nothing in the sample. That's called a false positive. False negatives also occur, but let's focus on false positives. We don't really know whether that's going to occur 0.5% of the time, 4% of the time. This is enormously material to telling you whether there's lots of infection in your community or pretty much none at all. But you will find nowhere in the world has anyone measured and released often this what's called operational false positive rate. You should disregard all announcements about case rates in your community because they're completely fraudulent. You cannot run a medical diagnostic test without those checks being run in situ every time. And so I argued repeatedly, and what I was finding I was getting was censorship, insults, I mean, really quite unpleasant stuff on things like Twitter. People would be assigned to come and write up insulting and bad and hateful things about you. There was no way people were willing to engage scientifically. And I'll tell you what that did. Very quickly, it caused less confident and less angry people to stop commenting. And I think that was the point of it. So as time went on, I found when I talked to fellow scientists, often retired scientists or academics, people I grew up with who are now hold chairs in immunology, they would agree with me privately that, you know, PCR testing as it was being done was completely nonsense and fraudulent, that the attribution of deaths in the way we've done it is completely stupid. Lockdown clearly was irrational and probably killing lots of people. But the difference was they were not willing to say anything in public because they said it's been intimated that the authorities in the university don't want us to challenge the government narrative or that of its advisors. So we're not. And that's what happened. We ended up with people looking the other way. And the more they looked the other way, the fewer people who were like me. And so eventually I became noteworthy for that bloke that keeps saying things, that scientist that keeps challenging. And then it was quite easy for them to write smear stories about me, call me an anti-vaxxer, you know, suggest I'd lost my mind or gone off the rails because, you know, if you're a viewer, you don't have to listen to me if I'm any of those things. But I assure you, I'm none of those things. And the reason I'm commenting is because I believe it's not just my life, but more importantly, that of my children and grandchildren that is being stolen from us by a systematic process of fear and control that's going to culminate in, I think, some very horrible times, and I'm desperate to wake you up. So when your government lies to you once or twice, we're probably quite used to politicians occasionally telling white lies, and we kind of let them. But when they lie to you about something technical, something that you can check, and they do so repeatedly over months, and they do it over many, many elements of the whole, of the same event, please, you've got to believe me. They're not telling the truth. And if they're not telling the truth, that means there's something else afoot. And I'm here today to tell you that there is something very, very bad happening. And if you don't pay attention, you will soon lose any chance to do anything about it. And don't say you weren't warned, because I've been warning people as long as I can and as hard as I can, that you can still, right now, take your normal society back. You can take it back tomorrow. You don't need masks, they don't work. Forget lockdowns, they never slowed transmission, which took place mostly in institutions like hospitals and care homes. You don't need to be vaccinated by inadequately tested and somewhat dangerous gene-based spike protein-inducing proteins. And you don't need to do what you're told by corrupt scientists who are apparently advising our government. If you don't do that in the next few weeks, it will be over. I believe if we get to a point of a so-called vaccine passport, I think you will have lost the chance to take it back and you will regret it. Government policy from the beginning, before even the virus arrived in our country, has turned decades of understanding of how to protect people from infectious diseases on its head. So we've never used lockdown before, and the good reason for that is it's not effective. I've just explained that you need to be symptomatic in order to be infectious. So what we do is we quarantine the sick. We've always done that. You know, we've quarantined the sick because that's how you avoid infecting, you know, the wider population. So the idea of quarantining the well, this so-called lockdown, is a new invention, and it has no foundations whatsoever, either in science or in the history of controlling epidemics. Also, mass testing of people without symptoms has no underpinning science at all. You know, it's just a way of frightening people. And this idea, for example, that you can be ill even though you have no symptoms, and you can be a respiratory virus threat to someone else even though you have no symptoms, that's also invented in 2020. There's simply no history of it. And it defies common sense as well. So most people probably are aware when I tell them, you've got an incredibly good facility for noticing as you walk towards somebody whether they represent a health threat to you. You can tell just from the way their posture, how they're moving, you know, have they got symptoms, eyes, nose, and so on. And if they do, you instinctively move around them. And if you think about it, that goes right back to prehistory, where one of the things that could kill you in wintertime would be catching a respiratory virus, perhaps being disabled for a few days. That might be enough to kill you, even if you were fit and well, that might be enough to kill you. And so it's a strong evolutionary advantage for us to be highly aware of whether or not someone represented a threat to us. And the fact that we're very good at that, I think, should tell you that they are reliable guides as to whether someone is a threat to you. So if they're not symptomatic, they're not going to infect you with flu. They might stab you or hit you on the head, but they're not going to give you a chest infection that could kill you. And yet, time and time again, you know, lockdown, asymptomatic transmission, the use of high multiplication molecular biology tools, just over and over again, wearing masks. All of these things have either never been used before or we already knew that they didn't work. And so I'm just piecing them together. You can go and check these things in 5 minutes if you haven't done already. But when the government lies to you for a few weeks and then it extends to a few months and then for over a year, you know, come on, this is a respiratory virus, they say, that's slightly worse in the elderly and already ill than is flu. It's definitely less serious to those who are younger and fit than is influenza. That's clear from the published literature of COVID-19. So why is it you're still hiding from...
Okay, so that's that video. Then somebody sent me something today. And yeah, we know this, and this is somebody else. This is, you can listen to her.
So that's really, really important. You're in control. So that's really, really important. To what can I do to help? So I just wanted to take more time to explain what exactly the vaccine passports are, because there's a lot of, I wouldn't say misinformation, I would say lack of appropriate warning about what this platform really represents. So this is probably the most serious warning I've ever given. As I said earlier, I've been warning everyone since 2008 that we could slip into a fascist reality, and the vaccine passports really are the last step. And, you know, as someone said today, the hill worth dying on. Or the last fight that we have to fight. Because once the passport vaccines are accepted, there is no more resistance. There is no more choice. So let me explain, as CEO of a tech company, Daily Cloud, exactly why this not even proposal. It's being rolled out in Israel. It was rolled out in Israel. It's being promoted in Britain that you have to scan your vaccine passport in order to go to a pub and have a pint. It's, you know, President Biden in America said this is going to be mandated. My tyrannical governor Andrew Cuomo said that it's got to be, you know, rolled out, the Excelsior Pass that IBM is creating. It's happening at warp speed. So please don't be fooled. This is the most dangerous tool that humanity has faced in my lifetime, if not ever, in terms of human liberty. Basically, let me explain a little nerdy tech detail. When you sign up on a website, you or on an app, there's a place where you sign your name and you choose a password, and then there's a list of terms and conditions and you agree to them. Well, that's really important. It seems insignificant, but it's really important because what it means is you have choice. You can read the terms and conditions and you can think, this is too tyrannical, they're gonna sell my private details. I'm not willing to agree to these terms and conditions. They're not in my favor. And the password and username means that you get to decide when you log on to TD Bank or when you log on to PayPal. You're not walking around your daily life logged into PayPal. You're not walking around your daily life logged into, a credit score. So that's really, really important. You're in control. So with the vaccine passports, none of that will be the case. Everyone has to be participating all the time. And what I mean by that is if you don't participate, you don't get let into the supermarket to buy food. You don't get let into the pub to meet your friends. You can't get into the restaurant. You can't travel on an airplane. You can't travel on a bus. You can't travel on a train. And it's not just that you're forced to participate. I can't say this any more clearly. The vaccine passport platform is the same platform as a social credit system. I'm going to say that again because it's so important. The vaccine passport platform is the same platform as a social credit system, like in China, that enslaves 1 billion people. In China, the CCP can find any dissident in 5 minutes because of the 360-degree surveillance of the social credit system. And it means that when you act like a good citizen, you get a boost. And when you act like a bad citizen, opportunities get closed to you. Maybe your child doesn't get into college or get into prep school. Maybe, you don't get that job, you don't get that promotion. The vaccine passport that is being proposed in the rest of the West is the same platform. I can't say that enough. Speaking as a tech CEO, what I mean is once this platform rolls out, any other functionality can be linked to it with no problem, right? Any other functionality can be linked to it. What does that mean? It means that with a tweak of the back end, like virtually no extra development, PayPal can be switched off and on depending on how machine reading assesses what you've been saying on social media. So if you've been too conservative or too liberal, or you've used the word Trump too often, or the words pro-choice too often, or Sierra Club, machine reading will let PayPal know. PayPal will switch off or dial up your interest on a credit card, and that's the world you're living in. Microsoft and Salesforce have already been proposing versions of the vaccine passport because many tech companies are vying for this incredibly lucrative and immensely powerful contract, right? The people who have this data are going to run the world, basically, and they're going to be sort of the gods of the world. And everything will go through them. They'll be more powerful than nations. They'll be more powerful than the UN. But with a tweak of the back end, you can never be positive you know, or never have a green check, never have a I don't have COVID check. And there's no way to verify the COVID PCR tests. And studies and whistleblowers have shown that they can create false positives by just running them at above 25 cycle thresholds, right? So if you're a dissident, you can always be positive for COVID. And there is no way to challenge it, no way to verify it, and you'll be in a second class category in society for the rest of your life, and your family will too. When you agree to the vaccine passports, when you go to a pub or a play or a restaurant and you swipe that that code, right, which you're getting used to, because since COVID, you know, when you go to a restaurant, you're asked to swipe that QR code. That doesn't just, where does that go? I will tell you where it goes. It goes to a central database, and all the people who are with you, who are also swiping the code, their information is also going to a central database, which means that the vaccine passport, quote unquote, which is really a social credit system, knows everyone who's at that table. And if you're talking about, you know, resistance to the system, if you're talking about staging a protest or writing an op-ed or mobilizing support for a representative to pass a bill to roll back this system, the platform will know. And there's a functionality that creates maps of networks of people. And as you all swipe in your vaccine passport to that cafe or to that restaurant or even to that living room, right, it is geolocating you, and it can tabulate the searches you all have done historically, and it can read what happened on your social media as a group, and you as a group can be blackballed. Your social credit score can dial down, or you're all positive, right? None of you ever gets to shop for food. None of you ever gets your children into school. People who have been drafting proposals for contracts for the vaccine passport system, like Microsoft, they've said explicitly that the system can keep people who are positive from leaving the house, okay? And it can do that. It can make it impossible for you to get on a subway or metro or the tube in London. It can make it impossible for you to get on a bus. It can make it impossible for you to book an Uber or book a Lyft, right? And this is not like maybe 10 years down the line, maybe, you know, in a more dystopian society. I'm telling you, as CEO of a tech company, right now, with a literally half hour development on the back end, these functionalities can be integrated. And the last thing I really want to talk about is money. The US is starting to propose a digital currency. There's a white paper that was leaked to me of China proposing to hold the world hostage basically by using biodata and the biodata of everyone. And that is a goal. And again, a lot of these tech companies are in alignment or working with China, right? So why has this whole coronavirus insanity had the effect of weakening the West? Well, it's the Chinese Communist Party in alliance with big tech. And if you look at all the policies, they're about weakening the West, weakening our society, weakening our children, not letting them go to school, not letting grandparents hug grandchildren, you know, not letting us speak freely, not letting us congregate in town halls, not letting us pray, not letting us exert our First Amendment or Fourth Amendment rights. This is called subversion, all right? And so that has been happening for a year. We're being turned into a weakened version of the West so that China and the tech companies can be the global superpowers, transcending nation states. That's what's been happening. You have to face it. But what the quote-unquote vaccine passports will do is create a way for China, you know, who owns Zoom, right? It's owned by a Chinese company, and many, many American influencers and media companies have been bought up or bribed essentially by the Chinese Communist Party. And so what is the immediate capability of the vaccine passport? Well, Microsoft Salesforce rolled out an alignment of the vaccine passport with Apple Pay and with Google Wallet. And with a digital currency, you know what's next. If you're not a quote-unquote good citizen, if you see a movie you shouldn't see, if you go to a play you shouldn't go to, which the app will know, right? Because you have to scan it everywhere you go. There's no opting out for it. Then your revenue stream can be shut off, or your taxes can be boosted, or your PayPal won't function, and you don't have any choice except to get it back by being a good citizen and disavowing whatever, you know, renegade views you've been having. And I just want to say, I've been deplatformed 5 times now since I started warning people about this, by Twitter 2 or 3 times, YouTube, Vimeo. This may be deplatformed, but what was really striking to me about being deplatformed was the CCP-style conditioning with which I, as an American, was deplatformed. It wasn't just you violated our terms of service. You know, if you want to come back on, you have to not violate our terms of service. It was, we're giving you 3 strikes. You know, we're giving you 3 strikes, and at the end of that, you have to be a good citizen. And Twitter even gave me the opportunity of, like, erasing my own naughty tweets, like cleaning up my own mess, basically. So these are all CCP type conditioning. It's conditioning us to not be Americans. It's conditioning us to not be members of the West. And I really lie awake nights these days. Like, I've promised to reflect the danger exactly, accurately, since 2008 when I first wrote The End of America. Well, this is the most dangerous. There is no coming back from this. I mean, I was asked by a reporter today, what if Americans don't adopt this? And I said, you're already talking from a world that's gone if this succeeds in being rolled out, because there won't be any choice. There's no such thing as refusing to adopt it. There won't be capitalism. There won't be free assembly. There won't be privacy. There won't be choice in anything that you want to do in your life. And there will be no escape. So I'm sorry to be such a downer, but understanding this technology, I thought I had to warn you and I had to tell you. At Daily Clout, we've started a campaign to showcase model legislation at the state level to ban vaccine passports. It also, by the way, violates the Americans with Disabilities Act, which forbids you from even asking about someone's medical status, and forbids you from denying anyone access to goods or services based on physiology. It's totally illegal. But it also violates the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment. As a Democrat, I'm horrified that the Biden administration is rolling this out. But this is beyond partisanship. You know, Tories are rolling it out in Britain. In Israel, Netanyahu rolled it out. In 4 months, Israel crushed civil society because people who don't sign on to this pass system are second-rate citizens, and people even who do sign on to it who are dissidents are hounded and shamed and ostracized and surveilled 24/7. So they're horrified, and they're trying to warn the rest of the world, and I'm trying to warn you. So on Daily Clout, we're going to showcase model legislation. We're going to create a campaign platform for you to lobby your state representatives to pass legislation at the state level, which is the only hope to ban this. Please let your state representatives know and your congresspeople know that you will remember if they usher in this tyrannical totalitarian platform. And I can't say more from my heart. This is the cliff. Like, this is suicidal. This is the last step, and there is no coming back from this. So please join me in this fight. Thank you. I'm sorry to be so serious, but this is a very, very serious moment, a very serious technology, and we cannot let it happen on our shores. We have to save our Constitution, come together across left and right to save our America. Thank you all so much. Bye-bye.
I meant to tell you, her name was Naomi Wolf, a CEO of that company. I'll try to get it in the show notes. This is the hill we need to die on. If you don't understand what happened in 2020, we just started going along with all the rules and regulations. You don't think it was purposely so that they can steal the election. You need to look at all of Mike Lindell's thing. We are living in dangerous issues where I see, like, things playing out in the Bible that I'm like, wait a second, God, doesn't this happen after the rapture? And if you don't understand the Bible, it's time to get right with God. I mean, seriously, spend some time in the Bible. Because, woo, pick up the book of Revelation, start there. It's intense. And so I had to share that because people share stuff with me. And we got to share the hard stuff. And we need to talk about the hard stuff. And we need to come together as a nation and fight. And fight. Protest. Call. Make your voice heard. Start your own platform. Rally with other people. Now, you got to understand, the America Frontline Doctors, I'll share some of them. Yeah, you know what? Their website, I'll put it in the show notes, the America Frontline Doctors. I'm trying to, you know, expose the evil on this channel and also give you some good information too, right? But we have to fight and we have to come together. And you can't even Google things anymore. You like some of the stuff that people have sent me, I'm like, okay, well, I can take this and usually put it in DuckDuckGo and find it. Can't find it. I literally just had to use what they had. And I'm like, is it just gone or I just have it on this? And it's just bizarre. The censorship is ridiculous. So they're fighting with massive lawsuits for us. And I just want you to, America Frontline Doctors, okay. So let me go to their website. Now they have more than one website. You wanted the ORG, America Frontline Doctors ORG. There's a legal, there's a citizen page, and then in the citizen page, you can go there and you can connect with other people. And I'm gonna be doing the same so that I can rally and get connected with other people. There's also press releases, videos, protocols, tons of information. If you've not gone there, they update it pretty frequently. Media, videos. Let's just play a little video real quick here. Let's see, August 13th. They are putting out stuff every day, so you need to support them. So this is what they said on August 13th.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ryan Cole. I'm a board-certified anatomic and clinical pathologist trained at the Mayo Clinic. I have subspecialty expertise in skin pathology and fellowship training in that as well. I run a full-service laboratory here in Idaho, the largest independent laboratory in the state of Idaho. And I treat patients and have seen patients in consultation for the last almost 18 years here from Florida to California, licensed in 12 states. And I am an expert in immunology and virology as well. One of my board certifications, clinical pathology, involves virology. I did a year of PhD immunology research my first year of medical school as well. So virology and immunology, full lab medicine is what I do.
Well, you've been very generous with sharing your time and your expertise, and I appreciate you taking the time to be here today for sure. I'd like to pick your brain about how, if they are able to require these vaccines, from healthcare professionals, how do you think that that is going to affect the hospital care or the urgent care or any kind of doctor care that we receive as patients? Do you think that we'll see shortages, or do you think that there's just not that many people who will refuse?
Well, let me start by commenting. We call these vaccines, but in the emergency authorization of these shots, they clearly are using off the term investigational vaccines. And that's an important point to make. And we are asking people, those nurses, those students, those employees, to be subjects in an experiment on humanity. This is a large phase 3 trial by getting this shot of something for the which we do not know the long-term effects and side effects down the road. And we usually don't see those for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. In terms of shortages, forcing people to get this, there are people that value their bodily integrity. And as a hardcore scientist, I'm not political. I look at data. And when I look at the data, I'm already seeing the adverse effects from these shots in the laboratory setting. So these individuals who are subjecting themselves to this just to maintain a job, we're seeing it in young people, middle-aged people, old people. A lot of people are simply not going to get this shot. I've heard administrators from the system say, oh, we'll make you cave. You'll cave. I have plenty of nurses who have shared with me that that's the mantra within administration. We're going to make you cave. They won't. They will leave. They will stand for principle and their bodily integrity and their long-term health. And they have every right to do that, to not be a subject in human experimentation and coercion. So they're going to see huge staffing shortages, huge. I have a friend in Indiana reached out today and looked at a couple articles from there. There are already shortages in their staffing within their hospital system. They're trying to do the same thing. Another physician group out of Michigan, same thing. They already have shortages. Now they're going to have massive shortages. So this isn't just a mandate on employees of a healthcare system. This is a mandate and an attack on an entire community and an entire community's wellness and access to care. They pride themselves with these institutions to say, oh, we're here for the patient, we're here for the community. This clearly says they're not. It is literally the antithesis of that. They're flipping the script and giving a, you know, mellifluous commentary on how much they're here for us, but they're literally attacking us and our access to care because those nurses don't want their bodies damaged. They don't want their fertility damaged. They don't want their long-term immune health damaged. They don't want to increase their risk for cancers. But I'm seeing the signals in the laboratory already. They don't want to subject themselves to that, and they should not have to be coerced into an experimental shot, as it says in the emergency authorization, investigational vaccine in order to maintain employment. This is a violation. We made a promise in 1947 after World War II that we never again would experiment on humanity or coerce anybody against their will. And literally, this is what we're seeing. I mean, there were Nazi nurses and doctors hung for doing exactly what we're doing to humanity right now, saying, you will participate in an experiment or else you will lose your job. And we are taking away the freedom and sovereignty of people over their bodies and their minds as well. We're doing this through, we've had three options this year. We've had fear, suffering, and vaccine. Really, the option is hope, early treatment, and immune wellness. And we as a society have been subject to, you know, a worse outcome of this disease because we haven't focused on some of the basic public health messages. Yes, as in some of the talks people have seen me give, we are a vitamin D deficient nation, magnesium and vitamin K2 as well. We're an obese nation, we're a metabolically unwell nation, and those have predisposed us to the poorer outcomes compared to other nations. And now we're trying to force people into a shot, and this is abject silliness. We're trying to force people into a shot for last year's virus. This is Delta. This is not Wuhan strain. This is Delta now. This is the India strain. But what you don't hear is Delta is a less malevolent virus. Yes, it's spreading faster, certainly, but it's less virulent. So this virus, if you look at the data out of India, and you don't hear this in the media, sure, it's a big nation, a lot of people, and their raw numbers of infection and hospitalization and death seem high, but statistically, their death rate was 1/7 that of the Western world. That's good news. Viruses acquire benevolent mutations over time. We call it Mueller's ratchet. As you look at the inbreeding of something over time, it becomes less strong. This same concept is happening with this virus already. Now, it's interesting to note that in the UK right now, there are about 15,000 documented breakthrough cases a day in the vaccinated by the Delta variant. The Delta variant, these vaccines, based on the statistical modeling one would have to do to get approval for these as an emergency authorization, this shot would not be authorized for Delta statistically right now. When we see this data out of Israel. The other important thing I think that we're leaving out is the fact that natural immunity is already broad across the nation. For every couple of cases that, you know, we document in the laboratory, there are multiple people who have had the infection. We are not screening before vaccine. The huge amount of adverse reactions we're seeing are people who are infected with virus and getting a shot while they're infected, and then the antibodies you form are attacking the organs in your body. Also, those who have already mounted an immunity against SARS-CoV-2, if they get a vaccine, they are multiple-fold increased risk of adverse reactions because they've already had COVID, they already have immunity, and it puts their immune system in a hyperimmune response. So we're negating natural immunity. In Israel just last week, a study came out that showed in breakthrough cases from those who had already had SARS-CoV-2 and natural immunity versus those that who had had the vaccine, the recurrent infection rate in those that were naturally immune was 0.001% reacquisition of virus. The vaccinated got Delta strain and this virus at a 7 times higher rate than those who are naturally immune, clearly indicating that natural immunity is a stronger immunity than a vaccine immunity from a leaky vaccine. This is not a sterilizing vaccine. It doesn't give you immunity. You can still get COVID. And the other important thing that the CDC admits they're not doing, other nations are, I listened to a great lecture out of the UK today, is the vaccinated can still acquire the virus and can still transmit the virus. At least 25% of those vaccinated are still transmitting virus out of the UK data from yesterday. So these are leaky vaccines. We're trying to force people into an experiment with an investigational vaccine for an investigational vaccine against a virus from a year ago for a new strain that is out now. Now, we can't play this whack-a-mole. Oh, let's, which strain next? We can barely get people, quote, vaccinated now. By the end of the year, maybe we're on strain Zeta of the virus. So what do we need to focus on? We need to focus on early treatment of this virus. And it's widely available, and it's cheap, and it's generic, and that's why it's not approved. Because if there were a treatment for this virus, they cannot have authorization for these vaccines, period. It states, I think about page 3 in the emergency authorization, it states clearly, you cannot authorize this investigational vaccine if there's an effective therapy for this virus. Well, many of my colleagues around the country and myself have worked on early therapies for this virus. Dr. Peter McCullough out of Texas, the most published cardiologist in the world, and the most published cardiologist, or the most published physician on COVID, over 50 articles on COVID this past year, and he has focused on early treatment. The death rate in his cohort and those of us that have used the McCullough protocols is 86% lower than the hospitals, 86% lower. In prevention trials with many of these early treatments and prophylactic treatments out of Argentina, Dr. Carvalho's study showed a 100% prevention of acquisition of SARS-CoV-2 on patients that were on prophylactic ivermectin. And ivermectin has, it's a molecule, so I've been criticized in the media about speaking about this medication. The molecule doesn't read a textbook and say I can only treat parasites. This molecule, and this was a paper in Nature, one of the biggest scientific journals in the world, this molecule has 22 mechanisms of action against SARS-CoV-2, has 7 or 8 antiviral mechanisms, and it has multiple immune modification mechanisms. In Dr. Carvalho's study, 2 months of healthcare workers taking ivermectin once a week, 800 individuals, 0 got COVID. In the placebo control group of 400 people, 57% in the placebo group got COVID. That's how effective ivermectin was at preventing acquisition of SARS-CoV-2 in a hospital setting. You can't claim that for these vaccines. You know, these vaccines, you know, they claim 90-95% efficacy. Really what that is, and I could get into statistics, that's risk reduction, your relative risk. What they didn't do, and the FDA failed in this, and they allowed them not to submit the numbers for the absolute risk reduction, the ARR. So it literally takes 120 people to get 2 shots to decrease symptoms in one patient. And so of those 120, how many people are gonna end up with autoimmune disease 2 to 3 years down the road? How many are gonna end up with cancer 2 to 3 years down the road, or 4 or 5 years? We don't know. But here's what I'm seeing in the laboratory already, and this is very, very concerning. When we give these shots, we can look at the types of white blood cells in the body. We can look at your T cells, your B cells, the ratios, and you have a broad array of immune cells that work together to fight off viruses, to keep cancers in check. We're already seeing the signals in the laboratory of decreases of certain critically important T cells that you need, your innate immune system. It's your Marines of your body, the first ones in, fighting off viruses, fighting off cancers. It's why kids have done phenomenally well and survived this virus at 100% rate statistically this year, because they have an innate T cell immune response that has 2 to 3 times the activity of an adult T cell immune response. They have 2 to 3 times the enzymes that throw the little hand grenades in the cells and blow up the infected cells compared to adults. And that's why kids have done so wonderfully against this virus. But what we're seeing in the laboratory after people get these shots, we're seeing a very concerning locked in low profile of these important killer T cells that you want in your body. It's almost a reverse HIV. In HIV, you lose your helper T cells, your CD4 cells. In this virus post-vaccine, what we're seeing is a drop in your killer T cells, your CD8 cells. And what do CD8 cells do? They keep all other viruses in check. What am I seeing in the laboratory? I'm seeing an uptick of herpes family viruses. I'm seeing herpes, I'm seeing shingles, I'm seeing mono. I'm seeing a huge uptick in human papillomavirus in the cervical biopsies and the cervical pap smears in women. In addition to that, there's a little infectious, you know, bump the kids get called molluscum contagiosum. What do you need to keep that in check? You need CD8 killer T cells. I am seeing a 20 times increase in individuals over the age of 50 of this little bump and rash. You know, that's innocuous, but what it tells me is the immune status of these individuals who have gotten the shot. We're literally weakening the immune system of these individuals. Now, most concerning of all is there's a pattern of these types of immune cells in the body that keep cancer in check. Well, since January 1 in the laboratory, I've seen a 20 times increase of endometrial cancers over what I see on an annual basis. A 20 times increase. I'm not exaggerating at all. Because I look at my numbers year over year, I'm like, gosh, I've never seen this many endometrial cancers before. I'm seeing invasive melanomas in younger patients. Normally we catch those early and they're thin melanomas. I'm seeing thick melanomas skyrocketing in the last month or two. I'm already seeing the early signals, and we are modifying the immune system to a weakened state. Great study out of Germany that looked at these profiles on young individuals after the Pfizer, showing this locked in, and we don't know how long. Maybe the immune system, you know, is gonna regenerate and those ratios will go back up. But who's studying it? And where are the long-term trials? 2 months, 4 months, how long is this profile locked in? We don't know. And how long is it gonna last, 2-3 years? What is gonna be the uptick in these solid tumor cancers over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years? We don't know. I can predict. I'm a data analyst. I'm not a politician. I look at data, and I'm already seeing concerning patterns. And so to say to somebody, in order to maintain your job, you need to put your body at risk and let us change your immune status for potentially a lifetime and put you at risk for autoimmune disease, cancer. Here's a very, very important one. In the Pfizer application to the FDA, now, the problem with most of these shots is we didn't do animal trials before doing human trials. The humans essentially were the guinea pigs. And in one of their addendums that they throw in, it shows their study on rats and fertility. And we've heard, you know, inklings within the media and some scientific reporting, well, what's going to be the fertility long-term outcome? The honest answer is we don't know. But in the Pfizer study, the fertility rate was decreased by 16%. Now, 16%, you think, yeah, that's not a whole lot. Well, rats are one of the most fertile creatures on the planet Earth. A 16% decrease in fertility in rats is at least a signal that says to us, we need to be hyper-cautious about what we're doing. And again, an experiment on humanity, and to coerce somebody into an experiment in order to keep their gainful employment, it's a violation of all medical ethics. I mean, this is pure malfeasance from administrators. And I think at some point, my physician colleagues may wake up from their stupor and trance that they're in and reflect upon the harm that they're doing upon humanity. You know, we have a mantra, we have a narrative of, oh, suffering, fear, shot. Never in the humanity in the middle of a pandemic if we said, oh, let's vaccinate during a pandemic. No, you literally select for variants when you're vaccinating in the middle of a pandemic. It's immunologically illogical to do something of this sort. And we are doing something that is anti-science. We hear the science this year. Well, I'm a scientist. There's no such thing as the science. If there were the science, we would stop doing science. Science is hypothesizing, theorizing, testing, succeeding, failing, taking that hypothesis and theory and then remodifying and doing something again. That's what we need to be doing. We don't need to be willy-nilly pushing forward with something we don't know the outcomes of and subject people to it. It's unethical. You know, I took an oath to first do no harm. That's psychological harm, physical harm, and financial harm to a patient. And I'm calling out my physician colleagues within these large administrations and health system. You are violating your oath. You are violating your oath. You claim to care for humanity, but you are literally taking the opportunity to harm humanity. We're at a pandemic where we're at endemic levels right now. We're in a state of 1.7 million people, and we see maybe 100 cases a day of the virus right now around the state. That's not pandemic levels, that's endemic levels. Is the virus going to be with us? Yes. Well, we need to look at early treatments. We need to look at being honest with the population and give a public health message. Let's take care of our health. Let's optimize our immune health. Let's be less metabolically unwell. Let's focus on natural health, natural immunity. Let's focus on if you get the virus, we're gonna treat you right away. We're not gonna send you home and say, okay, in 5, 7, 10 days, when your lips are blue, you come to the hospital, we'll put you on a ventilator, give you a little bit of oxygen, a weak steroid, I'm calling you out on the steroids you're using the weakest one possible, and you're afraid to look at the protocols of the frontline COVID critical care doctors, FLCCC.net. These are some of the premier critical care doctors in the world. They have protocols. They're saving patients 70, 80, 90% more than you are in your hospitals right now. And you are following the government and the NIH, and you are following very weak protocols, and the government is about 6 to 9 months behind on science, not the science. They're about 6 to 9 months behind. It's time for you in the hospitals to catch up with the protocols that are far more successful than what you are doing. You know, the definition of stupidity is to do the same thing over and over and expect a different result. Well, you know, I've talked to countless patients and their doctors won't do anything different. They're not being critical thinkers. They're not thinking outside of the box. They're not stepping into these realms of, okay, what we're doing isn't working. We can add this in. There's certainly no harm in doing it. You know, some of these early treatment medications are the safest medicines on the planet. One of them's been...
Okay, so he goes on. You're going to have to go see the rest of it. And I would suggest every single day going and seeing what they're posting. And man, sharing the crap out of everything they're doing and supporting those doctors and attorneys that are fighting so hard for people. I don't like to go over an hour, and I've gone over an hour, and it's so hard. Every single day I'm like sitting down and just like praying and going, God, I'm going to do my part in doing what I can to get whatever information I can get out to the public, because they're being lied to, and it's breaking my heart. It's breaking my heart. And so the censorship is real. Please come together and get on there. Get with some people. Share this. I'm putting multiple things together. So check out other episodes. And then check out them. And get off your freaking news. Get off your butt. And do something with the information you're hearing. You know what? Your family is waiting on you to do something, to fight for our country, to fight for people right now that are being injured and dying because of bad science, because of bad intel. I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know why. I don't understand. I don't know. I'm just going to be prayerful and share what I am hearing and be truthful to what I feel is right for my body. And I'm going to be trying to be truthful with whoever I can educate and help. And so that's with what everything I've been researching. And if your research says something different, I'm sorry. Read both sides. I'm reading both sides. And I'm seeing both sides. And I had COVID and I got over it just fine. And my daughter, who was freaking pregnant, was exposed to everybody in the house that got COVID, never got sick. I got her on protocols, pregnant, never got sick. So don't fear this. Be proactive in your health. God bless.